Fly ball, left field. It's deep. And it is grand slam. Reese Hoskins is a bomb into the second deck for Bryce Harper. How about this for a homecoming? That is crushed. Craig and a miss, and the ball game is over.
And welcome to episode 9 of Broad Street to Britain, a UK Phillies podcast. Yes, we are back. It's been 3 long weeks. We've both been on our travels, but we are back. And since we've been gone, Ryan, it's gone a tad downhill. And I can't help but feeling that since we've been gone, the Phillies have also just been declining a bit. So I feel like we need to come back, Ryan. We need to come back with our positivity and get some wins back on the board for the Phillies. But mate, how are you?
Oh, I'm really good. I'm getting used to life back in England now. It was a good time away. Enjoyed it very much. But yeah, it's the baseball's been interesting over the last week or so, hasn't it?
It has, Ryan. It has. It's been. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. We've got Alex Carr from The Good Fight coming to join us a little bit later as well, and we'll address it all. We'll address it all. But. How was your trip away, mate? You were in, what, San Diego, LA, Disney, San Fran. How was your trip? How many games did you see?
Yeah, I'm not sure that the LA Angels fans will be happy that you're calling them, like, the Disney Angels, essentially. But that is basically... Anaheim is basically Disneyland and the Angels. And that is... You're actually right. That was actually great. We had a good time there. But that was the non-Phillies experience. And the Phillies weren't in San Fran when we were there as well. But, wow, Dodger Stadium and Petco Park in San Diego, both brilliant experiences as a road fan. Reasonable weather, although I must admit it wasn't very warm. There was like this weird cloud hovering over both of those places at that time. And it was like a permanent, they call it June gloom, apparently, Dave. I didn't read about that in the travel agent's leaflets.
And you brought it back with you as well, because it's been nothing but June gloom here since I've been back from Philly. Rained every day. It's been cold. It's raining now. We've got a big old torrential rainstorm as we speak. It's just miserable. It's just miserable, Ryan.
Yeah, surprisingly, the Northwest isn't too bad, but this is not a weather podcast. I'm not going to bore the fans too much with that. The baseball, Dave, in LA was actually really competitive. And the Phillies got swept in LA, but I only saw the last 2 games of that series. And actually, both games, until the latter parts, were very close and very entertaining.
Absolutely, they were, yeah. I've got to say... You know, I never got swept in LA, but I thought watching the games, we were toe to toe with the Dodgers all the way until it was just literally a couple of bad innings in the series wrecked it for us. Apart from that, we were pretty even with the Dodgers. You know, we were fighting our own, we were holding our own. You know,
like really,
and it was just an inning in one game, one bad inning in one game, and one disastrous inning in another, and that was it. The games there went wrong, and then we got swept, but. After that series, I wasn't too downbeat.
There was a really, really big positive as well, because on the Sunday, Nick Pivetta pitched like a man on an absolute mission, and really ever since has been pitching like a man on a mission. So if we're going to think positively about aspects of this team right up until today, that was the day that we saw that maybe Nick Pivetta is turning a corner, has turned a corner, and has really been one of the steadier arms in that rotation ever since.
Absolutely. When I was there, I saw him pitch a complete game, and that was one of the things I was not expecting to see when I was in Philly, was a complete game from Nick Pivetta. But my word, his curveball, his off-speed pitches were phenomenal. I was stood behind, sort of, you know, as you go to Citizens Bank Park and you can stand behind home plate, sort of in the concourse. I was stood there for a lot of it. Just watching him, and it was just one out, and I was getting shade because it was so hot that day. And his off speed was unbelievable. Watching it up close, you know, just seeing it for real, it was like, yeah, this guy is. But this is what we hoped at the start of the season we were going to get out of Nick Pivetta, and it really was promising. It was a good performance from the Phillies for the first 2 days I was there, and we nearly swept that one. It wasn't until the 7th inning it started to go wrong, and that was all brought on by a rare error as it's been this season. The Reds capitalised on it back in the game, but we could have easily swept that series. We could have got one out of the Dodgers. We could have got two out of the Braves. But, you know, all these defeats are now starting to build up. And the fan base is starting to get a little bit lively on Twitter.
Yeah, and there's different ways of looking at this now. Obviously, we all want the Phillies to be winning series, and we won a lot of series to start the year. So perhaps there's an element of we were spoiled because, I mean, what did we win? Like 80% of the first, like, 10 series or, you know, something ridiculous. I don't know. That isn't a specific stat, but it felt that way anyway. And I'm not sort of making excuses for the team, but the bullpen has true. That's the one element. The bullpen has been ravished by injuries. I mean, just looking at the list now in front of me that are injured or are pretty much still injured right now. Sir Anthony, Robertson, Hunter, Morgan, Arano, Neshek might be coming back or is back, but is pretty much not out the doghouse yet.
Well, he came back last night, pulled his hammy, and I think for your reports, he's going back on the IL.
There you go. So that's just, I mean, that's six guys, and right there, that's six. Certainly Sir Anthony, Robertson and Neshek, and the way Morgan was pitching early in the season, him as well, that's not just four bullpen arms, that's like four back end of the bullpen arms. And, you know, you can complain about the manager, you can complain about the offense, you can say we needed to get Dallas Keuchel, you can complain all you like, but I'll tell you now, any team in the majors struggles when four or five key bullpen arms get injured at the same time. That's a cluster injury, and that's difficult to deal with.
And then losing your leadoff man as well, McCutchen, you know, that has been a big loss because the lineup was so settled as well. And before the McCutchen injury, literally we knew that what lineup was going to be the same every day. Now the injuries have crept in. Gabe has had to mix up the lineup. It looks really, it feels very unbalanced, very out of sync right now. And McCutchen's injury has had a bigger impact than I think what people realise.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. There aren't many leadoff men that are sort of good for 20-plus home run power and have a bit of speed on the bases and get on base in the way that he did. So he was an ideal leader for this team, you know, statistically and in the way that he sort of carries himself. That was a huge blow, and we saw that injury happen in the first game at Petco.
Oh, you were there? Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, it was awkward because there was that weird play from Ian Kinsler where the smart little devil did that sort of like, okay, this isn't an infield fly, so I'm going to drop it and get you out. But Segura wasn't hustling down the first baseline. If Segura had been hustling, to be fair, then there's an argument that McCutchen never gets out. I'm not blaming Segura here. It's easy when you're sat up in the bleachers, kind of eating popcorn and whatnot. But the whole thing felt... It wasn't good because we'd just been swept in LA and we'd lost that first game in San Diego and he got hurt. And yeah, it was starting to feel pretty gloomy right then. Although they pulled out the series win in San Diego.
They did bounce back and then 1-4 on the bounce, in fact, because the two games, we sort of took over the mantle. You were there for LA and San Diego and then passed the baton on, and I was out there in Philly for the Red series, which was an absolute blast. And I'd like to take the opportunity to thank everybody who I met over that weekend. It was fantastic to meet so many of you. It was literally a whirlwind three nights, but it was the best time. The weather was incredible. The baseball was good for the best part of it, bar the last couple of innings of game three. But overall, the experience was phenomenal. And I also thank Greg for setting me up with the NBC guys as well. And that was an unbelievable experience. I'm hoping, speaking to a few contacts, that I've got some really good guests coming up for the podcast in the next coming weeks. So stay tuned, guys, and hopefully I'll have some more information later on this week. But as well as having Alex on later, I'm hoping to have a couple more really cool guests on later in the next coming few weeks. But yeah, the Reds series, the baseball itself was good. We won the first game 4-2. All the games were low scoring. The pitching was really good. You know, I was really impressed. Zach Eflin, man, that, again, another bright spot to this Phillies season. In fact, Eflin and Pivetta are definitely the two pitchers who really are stepping up and surprising us this year. Eflin was outstanding. You know, he really, really was. I think he's one of the best pitchers. He probably is the best pitcher Phillies have at the moment, and one of the best on his day in the MLB at the moment. Neris looked good when he came in for the save. So, a little bit tense. A few runners on base. I was like, oh, no, not again. Last year I was there for the Mets game, and he blew a save there, and I thought, that was the last time he blew a save, in fact, was that Mets game. And I thought, oh, no, his first save since... since then will be when I'm there again. Thankfully, he held on. And then Arizona was a weird series. It's like, well, a great series win against the Reds coming into Arizona. Atlanta, we could have won two games. Just it could be so different if we'd won that first game, couldn't it?
It's always disappointing when you lose against the divisional rival. We're fortunate. We did sweep them earlier in the season to open the season. So I suppose our record against the Braves isn't a problem. It's just that you get into a bit of a rut. You get cluster injuries. You get other injuries. You know, leadoff guy's huge. It's not an excuse, but you know, a team like the Braves that is as loaded as it is with as much pitching depth as they have and a lineup that they have, they're going to punish you. And they proved last year that they know how to win. They know how to win this division, and they're defending their crown. They're not going to take the foot off the gas. If the Phillies falter, they're going to take advantage.
But they did. But we were one out away. And Neris, who's been outstanding this season, and you know, of all the games that he was, you know, the one game that he slipped up and blew the save, it had to be against the Braves, who, like you said, are loaded. They are stacked. No, that offense is how I imagine ours to be when we are fully up and running with our offense. It's just there's no easy outs in that offense at all. And it was an absolute gut-wrenching defeat, followed by the complete role reversal on the Saturday night, the game after. What a comeback win that was. And then the Sunday, the live commentary me and Bob from the UK Braves did. Oh, like, just couldn't get excited from the first pitch. Vince was just, you know that from three pitches or so that this is just, there's something about the game feels like it's not going to go our way. That's how it felt. And
I'm shocked, Dave, that for some reason, it seems to me, I think I said a while ago, that to me, I would have turned to Eniel De Los Santos to start a long time ago. I did, and I thought they were going to turn to Irvin. They did briefly. I did suggest on this very podcast that Irvin gives up way too much hard contact.
Yeah, he did.
He's got good control, and that's all well and good when you're facing minor league hitters. But when you get to the major leagues, you give up that much contact, eventually it's going to be loud, and it was even loud out the bullpen last night. So, I'm not saying the kid's a total waste in that bullpen. He's a lefty, he's contributing. He's not the answer. It doesn't seem to be the answer. When is Santos going to get this opportunity? It's odd to me that a guy who's pitching so well at AAA and is on the up and up and wants to be a starter. Whoa. I don't understand why Kapler went with the opener in Vince, really. Vince actually seems to be carving out some sort of niche back end of the bullpen role. And it seems clear to everyone that that's going to be Vince's role, and that should be Vince's role. And I think that he can offer us one or two innings here and there, even in high leverage situations. Yeah. And, you know, get him suited to that. Don't meddle with his role right now, especially when you have Santos ready to go, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It's frustrating. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Vince is a back-end bullpen player. You know, why get him out for an opener? And it really didn't work, did it? It really didn't work at all. Do you think we've seen the last of Cole Irvin for a while in the majors? He's really now starting to get beat up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we need lefties in the bullpen. Alvarez is there. It's a shame that Morgan's hurt, but they've gone to Ranger Suarez as well, haven't they, as some sort of long relief option. So I don't really see Suarez and Irvin surviving on that roster. One of them's probably ready to go. And my personal opinion is the Phillies need a starter for Saturday. Surely. I don't know how this lines up with the minor league schedule, so that's something that maybe Alex can tell us. But surely now is the time for Santos to get his opportunity. And I think this guy, who has so far this season pitched 35 innings in the minors with a 1.15 whip, an 11.1K per nine.
Man.
He is ready. I mean, he's young, and that's who I want to see in the rotation. So I'm going to stake that claim and say that's the way that I want this to go.
Well, we've got question marks over Saturday and Sunday, haven't we? We've got Nola going on Chase Utley night on Friday, tomorrow night. And then we've got two question marks because night against Fedi. I think it's Fedi he's up against. Yeah, it is. Who's 3.68 ERA, 1-1. So slightly small sample size from him at the moment. Pivetta's ERA is crashing down. And he's a 4-1. So that could be a decent matchup. So we could get, if the offense finally get going again, which they're due to, they're going to bounce back. We could get something out of that, which will be damage limitation if we can get a win out of tonight. Especially going into some big series with the two against the Marlins and one against the Mets next week. If we're going to bounce back and we want a chance to bounce back, this next week is it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you want to try and win those series and get back on track, obviously. You know, it'll be interesting to see. Like you say, there's question marks over Saturday and Sunday now. One of them could be Santos if it lines up. What's he going to do with the other? And if he does go with an opener, which he may, you know, when I was in LA, he went with a Jose Alvarez as the opener in one of those games. And that actually worked okay that day. He did quite well, but it just seems odd to me that, I don't know, when you're trying to carve out that role for Velasquez, it must be confusing for Vince. You're a starter, you're not a starter. You're a back-end bullpen arm, you're not. You're a starter for an inning or two, now you're not. Maybe Vince is getting frustrated himself because he's being messed around with quite a bit, I think.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Going back to that, good point with Alvarez. Alvarez has settled a lot more than he started the season. And I thought, like you said, in the opener he was used in that one, he actually looked all right. I thought he looked decent. In fact, didn't we win that game that we used the opener for, that you were there for?
No, they wound up losing that one. That was the second one in LA, but did all right. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that Jose Alvarez is the answer to our opener woes. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is it seems odd that he used him as an opener. And then he's changed it and gone to Vince. So, I mean, who's going to be the opener this weekend? I have no clue. It could be Ranger Suarez. It could be Juan Nicasio. I mean, it could be anyone, judging by what we've seen so far. So, it's all up in the air. And there doesn't seem to be much stability at the minute. I think that's the word that I'm looking for. It seems a bit ad hoc.
Yeah, the line, there's no. I know injuries haven't helped with JT, Jay Bruce as well. But yeah, the bullpen stability is not there. The lineup stability in the offense is not there. And it does have an effect where we're clearly seeing it. Sadly, for us, it's come against two teams that are on hot form. The Braves' run is incredible. They're still continuing to beat the Mets at the moment. They're pulling away. They're on a hot streak. The Nationals coming into this series were hot. I was a bit frustrated with the game against Corbin because Corbin's been on a bit of a downward spiral of late. And I thought yesterday he didn't look that good. A lot of pitchers were missing the zone and missing the zone by a long way. We were just swinging and missing horribly at him. And I just felt that if we'd had a bit more patience at the plate, we would have walked a lot more. And I think punished Corbin quite a bit. But who's that on? Is that on the coaches? Is that on Kapler for giving the green light? Is that in the player's head? What's that down to?
Well, I watched that game myself, and it felt to me like we lost it the minute that Bryce Harper tried to go from second to third for absolutely no reason and made the first out of the inning at third base.
That was Harper as well, wasn't it? That was Harper.
Yeah, that's not Kapler. Kapler didn't have time or the inclination to tell him to do that. And really, Kapler's philosophy would tell him definitely not to do that because he made the first out at third base. We'd have had first and second, and as it happens, the next guy up singled and the game would have been tied right there.
Yeah, we would have scored the run, yeah.
The inning ended, we didn't score any runs and Washington went straight back and got a run in the next half with a home run from, I think it was Brian Dozier. So that felt to me, game dead straight away. That's a mental error. Now, I'm not having a go at Bryce. And sometimes when you go on a bad run, people want to point the finger at everyone and Bryce has been paid a lot of money, but over the last 30 days, has he performed at a superstar level? No, but he's performing pretty reasonably and, you know, he's doing okay. So But on that day, I think that loss, it kind of felt like that loss came as soon as that mental error happened and he tried to go to third and he got the out. I thought, we're not winning this game. It just felt to me like that game was over right there.
To be fair, Parra's throw from the outfield was bang on. I mean, StatCast it as his... He was above average in every category to get Harper out. So it's two ways. If Harper had made that, he would have been hailed as, oh, brilliant, Bryce. You know, great judgment, making things happen. He's got on third base. He's safe. He comes in and scores a run. But that's the way baseball goes, isn't it? But,
I understand what you're saying there, Dave, but from a statistical standpoint, and I'm sure that Gabe would probably agree with this, I don't have all the figures in front of me, with no outs, if you're on second base, a single scores you. You score. Yeah. You've now got three opportunities. You've got three outs, three batsmen come in to single you in, and that's a run. There is no reason that, I mean, okay, if he gets to third, you can score him on a sac fly, fine, or a ground out to third baseman or whatever, fine. But the increase in the probability of scoring then with one out and you on third, with one out and only a man on first, the risk is too high. It was a silly baseball decision and it didn't make sense. So, you know, sometimes wanting things to make things happen, great instinct. I understand he's trying to give us a lift, but in doing so, he actually got a bit hot-headed and made what was basically a rookie error.
It was a rookie error. A costly one, but yeah, I applaud him for trying to make things happen because Segura's struggling. I hope in these next few series against the Marlins and the Mets that it's a time for him to break out of this because he's back at home. I think keep him in lead off, keep giving him the at bats for this next week. But if it's not working, then start to adjust it. JT, he's just come back from injury. Hopefully he'll find his rhythm tonight. Although he got a single last night, didn't he, JT?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, when I'm looking at the lineup over the last sort of 30 days, the really cold bats are Segura, Hernandez, and actually Michael Franco is still really, he is ice cold.
Brad Miller and Sean Rodriguez are ahead of Michael Franco. You know, who would have thought that after April, you know, the March and April that man had, to now being, well, missing an action where you know, he's not even getting into pinch hitting situations. You know, Miller's and Rodriguez are ahead of him. Kingery's ahead of him. What's the future for Michael Franco right now?
I'm not entirely sure that there is one, Dave, apart from a bench bat, maybe.
He's even got no trade value now. Like, who's going to take him on? He's gone as a trade chip.
No, he's... Yeah, I say there's cold and then there's freezing cold and then there's, you know, where are you, like Jupiter or something. I mean, like, and I don't mean to be awful, but he's proving that he's not a reliable everyday option. And so he's going to be a bench bat. But the interesting thing is there are some pretty hot bats. I mean, obviously, everyone knows that Kingery's on a bit of a tear at the moment.
Yeah, loving that.
Power's there. You know, I'll caveat it with just saying that the walk to K rate is still very high. It's in line with last season. So I'm not sure he can keep this up at this level, but anything close to this is fantastic, obviously. But Hoskins is, you know, over the last 30 days, he only has four homers, but his OPS is over 920. He's doing okay. Jay Bruce has had a great start. Real Muto's doing fine. Harper's doing fine. So there's just two or three positions in the lineup that have stopped contributing.
I've got to say, the lack of power in the team is a bit of a surprise, considering, you know, before the season started, we looked at his roster and think there's power, there's on base there, but the home runs haven't come. I've lost my stat. One of the few stats I have about the power, but it wasn't a good one. But you know, yeah, it is a surprise, isn't it? You know, Hoskins, Harper are under what you'd hope for the home runs so far. In fact, JT is probably the one that's really on pace with his home runs. Cesar maybe a little bit below as well, what you'd hope for. Kingery, obviously above. He's obviously already broken his season tally for last season, but the lack of power is a little bit worrying.
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, obviously, Hoskins has 15 home runs and we're not even halfway through the season. So I would say that's pretty much bang on pace. That's, you know, that's 35 home run pace. So Hoskins is doing fine. As you mentioned, Real Muto's doing fine. Harper, you would expect to have a bit more, but I think we're going to see a hot streak at some point. So I'm not overly concerned about Harper. Losing McCutcheon, huge blow. 10 dingers on the season, he had in 200 at-bats. You know, that is a blow. It's nice to see Kingery contributing. Hopefully he can keep it up. But, yeah, I think because Segura and Cesar were at the top of the lineup at the start of the month, and those two are cold right now, you can carry them if they're batting eighth. And I know Cesar's gone lower in the lineup recently, but after the McCutcheon injury, both of those guys were hitting pretty sort of high up in the lineup. If no one's on base for your big sluggers, then you've got a problem.
That's true. I got the it's Kevin Cooney who tweeted this out this morning. Updated offense ranks: average 0.243, 22nd in MLB, OPS 734, 19th, slugging 414, 20th in MLB, home runs 86, 24th in MLB, runs 348, 16th in MLB. Yikes. It's pretty damning, isn't it?
Yeah, when you say it like that, it doesn't sound good, especially considering that Citizens Bank Park is a pretty much a small ballpark and home run friendly. So, yeah, the point's taken. The offense does need to step it up a bit, doesn't it?
It has to. Right, let's get Alex Carr on. So, guys, bear with us. We're going to move to the next stage and we're going to get Alex on. All right, so me and Ryan are half glass full, guys. We're half glass full about the Phillies whenever we can. But whenever I have a little, and I'm going to admit this week has tested me, I turn to one guy, and that is the guy we've got on right now. It's Alex Carr, the writer for The Good Fight. Alex, it's fantastic to have you on. How are you, buddy?
Dave, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
No worries. And Alex, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at AlexCarrMLB, or just find my stuff on The Good Fight whenever it pops up.
highly recommended, guys. Highly, highly recommended. It's Alex is one of the most positive people. You know, he's kept me going the last couple of days. He's picked me up. I read his tweets. I'm like, yes, he's right. Come on. And then the Phillies put in the performance. I'm like, Alex, come on, quick, tweet something. I need something. right. For me, Justin Clue summed up perfectly in his latest article in The Good Fight. He put, he's saying, but I guess my personal frustrations here lie in the fact that I never thought this team would remind me so much of the 2018 version so early and for so long. I'm like, yeah, you know, for me, That's sort of it too. It's the frustration of it all. We can't help the injuries. That's been really unfortunate. But Alex, for you so far this season, what sum up your feelings about the Phillies so far?
So John Stolness actually asked a really good question in our Slack chat, which is kind of like our Good Fight work chat. And he asked, is it that we're underperforming or that we overestimated what this team could be?
Yeah,
and
good question.
And to me, I have to say it has to be the former. We are underperforming to a degree that is so frustrating. I mean, there's no better word for it. It's very frustrating to watch, you know, some guys that we put so much faith into, like Bryce, like, I mean, Kutch obviously can't help tearing his ACL, but, no. You know, all of these guys that, you know, we invested so much time and so much faith in now are kind of not exactly putting out what we expected them to. And, you know, with high expectations, there comes a varying degree of result, and you really can't always predict what is going to happen. But I don't think everybody was so optimistic to the point where at the slightest sense of struggle, now everyone's getting a little disappointed. So for me, I like to think I'm very positive, like you said, but I'm also, I'm relatively realistic. And I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say, you know, these guys are performing at top-notch quality, and for whatever reason, we're struggling. I mean, it's obvious. You know, Gene Segura is in the midst of a horrible slump. Cesar Hernandez, as hot as he was in July, or in July, as hot as he was in May.
We haven't gotten it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As hot as he was in May is just ice cold in June. And I mean, Bryce kind of has been struggling for a while, but is getting really important hits here and there. But And his hustle is getting him into some trouble, whatever. Like, obviously, we're seeing, and Aaron Nola, don't even get me started, but we're seeing guys who we, you know, we were so lucky in the first half of 2018 that now that, you know, we're seeing a little bit of struggle, it's starting to feel like that second half of 2018 where, you know, we can't catch a break.
Yeah, we really can't. And you're right, I think, like that Braves game, that first game, we were so close. I just feel it would have been so different if we had saved that and then won again the next day, and the momentum would have taken us through. I don't think so. I think Sunday would have happened, whatever yeah. happened. But it's like you say, it's the small bad breaks like we had on that game one against the Braves, like we had against the Dodgers. Like I was saying to Ryan earlier on, we were toe to toe with the Dodgers for so long in that series. It was just a couple of bad innings, some bad breaks, and we're just not getting the rub of the green at the moment. And I think sometimes you've got to step back and look at it like that, because that is how it's, now it's all escalating. The offense has now hit a bad patch. And then, of course, Twitter goes crazy. Yeah. like it has done. But do you think McCutcheon's, not only on field we're missing him, but do you think that dugout presence that he brings that we're also missing as well?
Absolutely. I mean, Kutch is the greatest, as good a guy as you're going to find in the game, if not the greatest guy in the game. I mean, there's nobody with a better social media presence. There's nobody who puts up jokes more. There's no, you know, even now with a torn ACL, he's live tweeting the games. He's cracking jokes. He's, you know, he's just a great guy. And of course, we're missing that dugout presence. But at the same time, I think what it's really missing is, and this is by no fault of Gabe Kapler and no fault of, you know, anybody in the dugout, it's just missing somebody that's going to grab them by the shoulders and wake them up. Because right now, this team is capable of so much. And I feel like once they're down, they're really down. Like nobody is there to slap them in the face and just say, hey, wake up. We have games to win. We're so in this that, you know, dropping a game here or there isn't going to matter down the stretch. I mean, we're facing down a Braves team that is so incredibly hot right now, but is so incredibly lucky in that same vein. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've had a much easier schedule than we have. And you can, you know, just look at, compare the two schedules and you'll see that. But second of all, you know, people are pointing to Mike Soroka, who has a twos ERA. I mean, I keep saying this on Twitter. He really has yet to face a true challenge of an offense. And when he does, it's been the Pirates or the Mets. And they've shelled in his last two games, and that's, you know, that's just been the outcome. Or you look at Austin Riley, whose K to BB ratio, and for those who don't know what that means, his strikeout to walk ratio is absurd. It's like 45-5, I think, which is, that's, wow. Success is not sustainable. It's like when Rhys Hoskins burst out, once the league figured him out, that was it. He slumped hard. So what we're facing down right now is a team of Braves that are incredibly hot, incredibly lucky, and we're not that. And it's a four-game difference that can be made up in the span of a week.
Well, it could, with the Marlins, the Mets, and the Marlins again coming up. I was saying to Ryan earlier on, this next week is the perfect opportunity for us to bounce back, isn't it?
Right, and we only fell behind in the last 2 weeks. Look what happened in 2 weeks. Why can't we make that up in a week? That's why I don't see myself as, like, you know, I don't find it that hard to be so positive. Because
Alex, so you know,
responsible. Yeah.
Sorry, Alex. The,
no, go ahead.
What is interesting to me there is that actually when I look at this rotation right now, and I know we're waiting on some options over the weekend, but I know that Nola and Arrieta haven't been as good as perhaps we would have hoped, but they're not going anywhere. They're in this rotation, and at least we can say that they are guys that are going to be there. And Eflin and Pivetta are performing actually very well over the last month and are also pretty solidified. So that's four of the five rotation spots, pretty solidified, pretty good. It feels to me like the offense is been the bigger disappointment? I mean, the bullpen is a different issue and has had injuries, but would you sort of agree with me now that we're at this point where, okay, Scott Kingery's red hot, although you just mentioned Austin Riley's K to walk rate. I don't know if you've seen Scott Kingery's, it's even worse. Would you agree that it's the offense, actually, that while that's the part of this team that perhaps we were all most excited about, that's been the bigger disappointment?
I would definitely agree that in varying degree of disappointment, it definitely is the one that is hitting us hardest. We knew that the rotation wasn't anything super special coming into it, so we didn't exactly expect them to be superstars, although, you know, Zach Eflin has been huge, and he's really showing, he's showing his first-round pedigree, and he you know, all the things that we've been waiting for from a healthy Zach Eflin are showing up, and that's amazing to see. Yeah. Same with Nick Pivetta. Over the last, you know, few weeks, we've seen that breakout Pivetta that we've wanted to see. So that is starting to become a bit of a bright spot, especially with how, you know, unlucky we've become with, you know, how Velasquez and Eichhoff and Irvin kind of panned out. You know, that depth that we thought we had hasn't exactly shown its face. So either way, yes, the offense is totally, you know, right now the main focus of what is going wrong. But at the same time, that's where the luck comes into it. You know, we can't get two guys hot at the same time, and that's by no fault. That's by no fault of the offense or of, you know, Matt Klentak's roster provision or, you know, Gabe Kapler's management. That's of nobody's fault. That's just luck. You know, if we can get Bryce and Reese synced up at the same time, and Scott keeps producing,
can you imagine?
And JT Realmuto does in Citizens Bank Park what he is projected to do. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Wait. You just said that Austin Riley is bound to become much worse because of, so don't tell me that Scott Kingery is a definite to stay hot, because you know he isn't.
So I will say, not this hot, definitely not. But what Scott Kingery has that Austin Riley does not have is pure contact ability. Okay. You know, I'm not expecting Scott Kingery to be a guy that's going to punch through, you know, 20 home runs in a season consistently every season. But what I am expecting is a guy that hits for contact, moves runners, you know, gets the ball into the gap. That's what he's always been. He has quick hands, he has quick feet, and he is now bulked up to the point where his stuff doesn't just squeak out of the infield, but it flies. Mm. So we're looking at a guy that, you know, that is progression that is sustainable. We've seen this from him before. Austin Riley, before this year, was nearly considered a flop. That guy struck out at a rate that was totally, you know, unacceptable.
Like Kingery last year.
Right, and he's still doing that. While Scott Kingery has shown in the past that, well, yes, maybe he does strike out often, it's not to the point where it diminishes his contact ability. And you could say that because he swings so much is why his contact ability is so good. Whereas Austin Riley, when he makes contact with the ball, he hits it far. He's see ball, hit ball far, but he's not see ball, hit ball for average.
We like Braves hate on this podcast, so we don't mind a little bit of that. Slightly different question for you. What does this front office have against Eniel De Los Santos, and when is he going to get a crack in this rotation?
So I've been talking to Matt Winkelman about this a lot. Matt Winkelman, if you don't already know, he is the guy for Phillies prospects. If you don't follow him, go look him up on Twitter. He is the man. And he's always right. So that's more than I can say for me. But I shout him out on pretty much every podcast I go on because I always reference him because he's so good at this. But for me, my personal opinion is going to be, and we'll see what happens when they have to name starters in a couple of days, because that's going to be a journey. But I think they are seeing what pretty much every scout in baseball is seeing about Eniel, is that he doesn't project for a starting position. He pitches from a really unhealthy arm slot. He has a two-pitch mix, really. Sometimes throws a third in there, but, you know, that fastball-slider combo, it's a relief makeup. It really is. And his stuff is great, you know, and he can get through the innings in AAA, but eventually it's hard to say. I mean, he keeps giving up consecutive long balls, even in the minors. He just keeps doing it. And, you know, that's because he gets fatigued and he starts making mistakes. So I think they're wary of either A, lowering his trade value, or B, what might happen with the nerves and the, you know, the fatigue and facing a major league offense. And while he's going to be facing, right, he'd face the Marlins if he's going to get called up, I think, because it's Nola Pivetta blank. So, blank, blank. Or no, Pivetta's today. So it's Nola.
Pivetta today, yeah. Pivetta, Nola, then blank, blank.
Yeah. So we'll see. But yeah. Honestly, he does have a good shot at getting the call in the next few days just because he's on the 40-man already and he can throw the innings and it's against the Marlins. But I don't know. It's. I think they're trying to, as well as with Adonis Medina, they're trying to keep them primed for a trade. That's my feeling on it. I don't know how, you know, everybody else feels about it, but that's my personal opinion.
A trade that could be happening in the next few couple of weeks. Now we're getting towards that sort of deadline that's sort of approaching. What would you do, Alex? Like, what is the pitcher out there that you would? Because I think it's, we all know now, it's going to be a pitcher. It's going to be a starter. We're going to go for. It's looking more and more likely. Throw it out there, Alex. What sort of package would you do for who?
So for me, I'm not necessarily looking at one of those top guys. Mike Minor is having a breakout year. That's great for him. He's 30 years old. He's being paid $9.5 million next year. He's going to be expensive. Madison Bumgarner is wasted. I'm not about that guy anymore. Haven't been for a long time. For me, first of all, I would like to grab two starters, and I think we should try to run a 6-man rotation. I know that's kind of out there, but I think Aaron Nola could use a break. And Jake Arrieta, as he proved yesterday, pitches really well on extended rest. So I think a 6-man rotation is not outside of the realm of possibility. And I think there's a really easy way to go about it. I think in the next week or two, go out and get one of those guys like Mike Leake or Jeff Samardzija or somebody who's being paid an insane amount of money that they're obviously not worth, and get that team, like they did with Jay Bruce, to pay down the contract, take him over here while giving up minimal value, and, you know, get a 5th man to help the 5-man now. And then at the deadline, maybe go for somebody like Tanner Roark or, who else do I like? Sonny Gray, if they're willing to give him up. Or, you know, Jameson Taillon. If the Pirates are selling on Jameson Taillon, grab that immediately. I mean, there are so many good controllable guys out there, and Roark's not controllable, but there are so many good controllable or less expensive arms out there that would be worth the prospect value that aren't, you know, guys like Mike Minor, who are at a premium right now that you're going to have to give up one of your top 5 prospects for. And I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that this team makes a playoff run for a long period of time, but, you know, we weren't expecting them to win the World Series this year. I don't, and anybody that was set their hopes way
this
too
is,
high.
This is sort of my argument as well. It's like, no, this comes down to people's expectations and preferences. For me, coming into this season, it was a winning season, first of all. I haven't seen one. Since from the Phillies, I've never seen a winning season since 2012. Right. Let's get over 500. Let's get into the playoffs. Getting the playoffs, anything can happen. You know, it's a bit of a lottery. So this season should be a foundation to get in the postseason, get some postseason experience behind these young lads, and then go for it next year. Then let's really go and challenge next year. I never saw this year as that year, as that
And anybody
attend to the World Series year this year. I want it next season, because what we can do is building this year. Is not only go for it next year, but the year after. We can build a bit of a dynasty. We've got pieces who could potentially be a dynasty package for the Phillies right now. And I think we've got to be smart. We can't be rash. We can't be listen to the fans and go, right, we can't panic buy is what I'm trying to say, and go out there, like you said, and get the Baumgartners who could flop. I see if we got Bum, I think he would be actually, he'll go the Arrieta way. I just have this feeling he absolutely
will. And that's the thing. Like, we as a team have our sights set on that rotation help next year. The offense is, like it or not right now, exactly what we wanted to see. We have a 1-5 that is absolutely deadly. We have, you know, we had at least a bit of depth in the bottom ranks of the lineup, which is now going to be completely fixed next year once we, you know, if you sign a placeholder for Franco, you trade Franco away, you keep Cesar, as much as I don't exactly want to. You have a bunch of guys that Alec Bohm is rapidly rising through the ranks.
I was going to ask you about Alec,
Why would you want to give away a guy that is absolutely? I mean, once again, I was talking to Matt Winkelman. He just gave me an update today about Alec Bohm. He says at third base, he looks better than he's ever seen, a lot more fluid. And he said that his swing is as beautiful as he's ever seen. His hips are loosening up. His, you know, his motion through the zone is just getting better and better. So why on earth would you want to trade away a piece that is looking so promising, that just jumped like 15 spots in the prospect rankings? Why would you want to trade that piece away while its value is at, you know, such a productive peak where you could make that work on a major league squad? I mean,
do you think we'd see him this year? Do you think, or would it be let's prime him ready for next year potentially and see him in spring training?
There's a possibility, a really small possibility, that he could be called up in September. But personally, I think it's going to be a mid-season next year call-up that is going to really change. I think they're going to sign a placeholder at third base, maybe a Ben Zobrist, or because, you know, he's excellent utility even at 39 years old. Ben Zobrist or Todd Frazier, somebody to hold down third base until he's ready. They're not going to rush him. And when he is ready, he will take over at third base. And, you know, he will slot in towards the maybe the bottom end of the lineup, but he hits so well for contact that power doesn't need to be there until maybe, you know, two or three seasons down the line. So, and even now, if he were, I was just talking to Pivetta Hype on Twitter as well. If he were to be called up right now, Alec Bohm would do just fine. He would hit maybe 250, 15 home runs. You know, just fine.
But that is already a progression and an uptake in what we have already. Because Franco's, I think, is, I hate to say it, but is, and especially for his age, but I think he's finished. And it's such a shame for a guy, well, with the Phillies anyway, it's a shame for a guy who started March and April so strong. And he's a likable guy. He's an upbeat guy. He's always smiling. I'm behind Franco and I really want him to have a good season, but it's just, he's behind Miller and Rodriguez now, and Kingery would fit in. You know, do you think it's the end of Franco for the Phillies at the moment?
It definitely feels like right now he's a bit cooked. He's regressing back into those tropes that we didn't want to see from him. He's grounding out in every at bat. He's not launching the ball. He's not, you know, he's not really doing much of anything. He's back to that thing where he strikes out, grounds out, or hits a home run. And that's not going to play in a competitive environment. And, you know, he's a guy that can do really well on another squad when given the time, when the pressure's off. But right now, we need someone like him to step up. And personally, I'm of the opinion that he should be playing every day now. I mean, your offense can't exactly get much worse at this point, that, you know, if you play him every day and he starts to figure it out, not only does, you know, he begin to aid the team, but it also raises his trade value. So, you know, if you're looking for a better option at third base, instead of starting Brad Miller or starting Sean Rodriguez, just let Mikel start, especially against righties. Like, it's no secret that he can't hit lefties, but against righties, let him start. Let him try and make a difference in, you know, the environment that we're living in right now. Let Scott play center. Let Mikel play third. You know, his defense is the one aspect of his game that's been really good.
Oh, so. I agree with that. When I was over last week against the Reds, I was really impressed with his defense. And he's a big guy as well. You know, he's a bulky guy, but wow, he's got some athleticism in his defense. And I think that's one of his game that's really has improved. But as you just put it there, actually, you're right. Yeah, let's stick him in every day, because the inconsistency of the lineup and the constant changes of position does unbalance the team. Because at the start of the year, we had everyone knew their position. Everybody knew where they were hitting. There was such a good sync in chemistry. And injuries have obviously now thrown all that up in the air a little bit.
Right.
But you're right. The Franco, let's get him in every... Yeah, you're right, actually. You've swung me. You swung me on Franco.
I mean, it's not really optimal, I guess you could say. But it's... Anything helps at this point. I think you want to squeeze as much value out of these guys as you can right now while you have the ability to do so. And, you know, if that means it's going to end up in him being traded for next to nothing, like, you know, that happens. If that means he's going to stick with the team as a kind of maybe that stopgap third baseman for Alec Bohm before he's ready, you know, that happens too. I just think at this point you need to, because he's not doing anything off the bench. He's not. He can't sit there as a utility third base, first base fill in. You know, we have Jay Bruce to step in at first base if we need. We have Scott Kingery to fill in at third. Like, just let him play every day. See if you can get him back on track. And it
feels like one of these guys that if he got a home run, especially in a big point, like a clutch home run, that would spark. It was the same with the whole lineup, actually. You just feel that something just needs to happen for all of them to get them going again. A Harper bomb, two-run bomb, and that'll be it. Hoskins is always a guy who, at the end of his slumps, he hits a home run, and then he's back for a good couple of weeks. Right. Segura just needs an extra base hit, you feel, to get him going. JT, the same. You just feel that these players are just so close to getting back to where they were with just some clutch hitting somewhere. And the same with Franco. You feel like if he gets that home run, we could see some upside out of him again.
Yeah, I agree.
In terms of the catcher position, because Knapp, I don't know what I'm not going to. Everyone's had their say on Andrew Knapp on Twitter, and I will say I do agree with most of it. But in terms of the prospects coming through, who are we likely to see? Is there anybody down there that we could see coming up maybe even this year to be a backup catcher?
Absolutely. In September, it's typical that a third catcher gets called up to kind of back up. So there's a guy in AAA that I've been tweeting about all season. His name is David Grillon. He is an absolute force. He's, you know, the only thing that was really missing from his game was a bat. And now this year he's hitting, I think he's down to like 306 now, but mid season in Lehigh Valley, he was hitting, you know, in the 350 range. He was, you know, squashing the ball. He was absolutely torching it. And he is a guy that has an amazing arm. He has a brilliant arm, almost Jorge Alfaro level, in that he's really good at nabbing base runners. And he's also pretty well versed in framing, and defensively he's all right. He's a bigger guy, but he's a solid, you know, piece behind the plate, and he swings now a pretty hefty bat. So that is definitely one to look out for, but there are also, we actually have a wealth of catching talent within the system. We've got Rafael Marquand at he's in Lakewood right now, I believe. Yes, he's in Lakewood. Then there's also Rodolfo Duran, who is either in Clearwater or Lakewood. I can't remember at this moment. And then Logan O'Hop, who just started in Williamsport. They're all guys that had insane seasons last year and are following it up just as well this year, even though, you know, Williamsport just started. But they're all guys that are going to really excel through the system, I believe, especially Marchand. He is a catcher, a solid defensive catcher, decent arm, great bat. He makes great contact. And that's really awesome to see from a catcher. So I think that is one of the positions where we actually don't exactly need to worry about, especially with JT holding it down at the forefront of it. Mm. So I know people don't like Knapp, but there is better days in the farm system, that's for sure.
That's some positivity, because I don't know, my minor league knowledge isn't great, which is why I asked Ryan about a lot of minor league questions. And now yourself, because
both of those catchers were mentioned on Prospect Watch earlier in the season. Marshawn and Gruan. UK Phillies fans getting the good info there from Alex, because he's absolutely right. Gruan and Marshawn, pretty promising catching options in the system. And I do think that Gruan, I agree, he's going to play a part this season. There's some power there, and There might be some sort of K to walk issues with him, but as a backup catcher, even as any sort of catcher actually in the major league level, it's less of a concern. You've got power like that, and you can catch as well behind the plate. You're going to be very useful.
Yep.
Brilliant. So, yeah, this is better. I'm feeling so much better about the Phillies already. This is exactly what I wanted. So, Alex, this next week is a big week for the Phillies. How do you come on? Let's keep bringing it up. How do you see this next week going?
Honestly, I think a Marlins series is exactly what we need right now. I think if there's going to be any kind of salve that you're going to put on this wound, it's going to come against them. And I know there are so many people that are like, oh, but we've only like taken 2 out of 3 this year, like against them. We've never, we haven't swept. Like, who cares? Now's the time, you know? And we're lucky we get to avoid I think Yamamoto, Jordan Yamamoto, I think is the guy they just called up.
Sunday. Sunday we get him.
Oh, we do.
Yeah, it's Smith. We avoid Smith. We avoid Yamamoto. Yeah, but Yamamoto we get Sunday. We're scheduled to anyway.
Which is, I mean, that's fine. He hasn't been torched yet. He's only tossed 14 innings against the Cardinals.
Ah, so. Small samples then.
Exactly. So, yeah. What we're looking at is a series where if there's going to be a time to really amp it up, it's going to be this series. And I think we are going to be able to do so. And I honestly, I very much see us. I think we have a 10-game spread now, or a 10-day, 10-game spread that I would like to see us take eight of the 10 games that we're about to play against the Marlins and the Mets. I think if we can do that, I mean, first of all, that does not only like right the ship immediately, but it shows that, you know, against our division counterparts, because when you look at what we just did, what we just faced a red hot Braves offense and then the Nationals' two best pitchers on which they have sunk $350 million into them. Of course they're going to pitch well. Like, yeah. it doesn't matter what kind of season they're having. They're facing a division rival. They're going to be on top of their game, even if they have a broken nose and a black eye. You know, like, that's just who they are as pitchers. And, of course, we're going to struggle against them because our offense is struggling and they're catching us at a down moment. It's not like they beat us up. Like, it's not like Anthony Rendon hit four home runs in this doubleheader.
Well, yeah, that's really true. Yeah, you got to look. Yeah, 2-0, and for a red hot Nationals team, like you said, just the two runs and the six runs. But it was 3-1 came late on.
It was 3-1 going into the ninth inning. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not like they beat us up. We just couldn't produce against their two best pitching talents, and that happens. I think what we're seeing here is sequential, you know, just difficult matchups. And that's going to happen, and that's why everyone is so negative right now. But we're about to face a Marlins team, you know, that is also kind of hot right now. You know, their pitching staff is really, really good at the current moment. Yeah. And that sucks, but I really think this is going to be the series in which we not only break out the offense, but I think that's going to come against the Mets. I think that's going to come against the Marlins again. I think this is the time to start going on a hot streak. And honestly, if I'm going to make a bold prediction, and this isn't me just being positive, but I don't know who the Braves play, but I really think we can retake the division lead if we sequentially continue to keep up a good offense, if we start well in this series.
It's the Braves Nationals this weekend.
Right. So, you know, no time like the present to get hot.
And it's Chase Utley night tomorrow night.
Right.
Yeah, yes. It's gonna be a packed park. Nola to get back on form.
That's the other thing. We haven't been home. Like we had the home stretch a bit before we left to go out to Atlanta, but that was it. I think what we need is a good home stretch right now where we can get the fans back on our side, get the negativity out of the air and really just plow through and get back to that division lead. And I think people will finally start to see that if the offense can wake up in this next series.
Absolutely, because we've got three against the Marlins, three against the Mets, three against the Marlins, and then we go back to Atlanta for a three-game series, and then New York to finish it off before the All-Star break.
Atlanta, who, by the way, we are 4-2 against this year. People somehow forget that we swept them in the to begin the year. I mean, it's not like we were red hot. We just are a really good team. They have a terrible pitching staff and bullpen. They just have a really good offense, and that's what we have to get through.
And we were so close to 5-1. Like I said, small margins and a bit of bad luck in that Friday night game against the Braves, and it could have been a completely different story.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I feel like this was a therapy session, and now I feel great. You know?
I'm glad. Hopefully, we can beat Strasburg tonight, and maybe see a little bit more of a.
Is it Strasburg tonight? It says in the
I think app, so, right?
It's Fedi.
Oh, did they tug Strasburg? It said Strasburg yesterday. I haven't looked at all today, so I might be wrong.
It's constantly changing at the moment. The MLB app, Bat app, it says Pavetta versus Fedi.
That would be great. I'd love to not see Strasburg.
It's changed. It's Strasburg tomorrow against the Braves.
Wow.
According to this, yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'm fine with that. I don't mind that at all. I'll take that. And hopefully Pavetta can continue his current success. That'd be great.
Absolutely. Alex, thank you so much for coming on, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's been fantastic. And Ryan, I don't know about you, but yeah, I'm looking forward to tonight's game. I'm staying up.
No, do it. Real pleasure. And I'll tell you what, I think my favourite bit is the absolute sort of disregard for the Atlanta Braves. Like, their bullpen's awful. They've got no starting rotation. Yeah. Austin Riley's rubbish. I mean, I love that.
I mean, it's true. You can look at, I mean, their staff ace coming into this year was Mike Foltynewicz, who currently sports, I think, a 6+ ERA. So you can't come to me and say our rotation's bad when you look at that roots. I mean, come on. And even Keuchel's not going to help.
You are going to get some talk from Mr. UK Braves when he listens to this.
Shout out to UK Braves, because he's the man. He's the only Braves fan I think I can ever stand. So
that's true.
I'm here for it.
Did you see the live fans commentary we did on last Sunday?
I did. I was trying to chat, but it wouldn't let me. I was so excited.
Yeah. We had some early glitching problems. It settled itself out, but the problem is the game was over by the first inning. I couldn't get. But to be fair, to Bob, and I've met him in person too, and I'll see him again next week for London Series. He's a really good guy.
He's a great guy.
He loves to put his. He knows his stuff as well. He does know his stuff, but
especially about the Phillies. He knows a lot about the Phillies. He's a Phillies fan.
Let's be honest. He's a Phillies fan.
He's not, because it's the Nationals. He knows his stuff about the whole NL East. He's the man that I'll actually go to for everything about the NL East. He knows stuff about the Nationals. He's a good guy. I know he gets a bit of slack on Twitter because he's a bit opinionated, but the guy is great. Yeah, he's one of the Braves fans. Yeah, and he's a passionate fan.
Yeah, he really is. I messaged him the other day because I really, over the last few days, have resorted to like blocking a lot of Braves fans just because they're that type that are going to kick you while you're down. I don't think fan base is even that bad. And it's really, I just don't stand for that because I'm so innately positive, but also just because like, that's just mean-spirited. Like, this is a game. Baseball's a game. You can't get so angry about, you know, or so spiteful about a game. So, you know, I've resorted to kind of blocking Braves fans, but he really has redeemed that. And I know he's from a separate country, but you know, that doesn't matter. He's really redeemed that whole side of it's just a game for me. So that's really been helpful. He's a great guy and he knows his stuff. He's a great follow if you don't follow him already.
Yeah, that is it's UK Braves. Their Twitter handle is Braves in the UK. At Braves in the UK. Yeah, give them a follow. They are the good guys. It's Bob who mainly runs that. There's also another guy called David Hendy who also knows his stuff and a really good guy. So, you know what? They're not, the Braves fans aren't all, well, the UK Braves fans. Anyway. Yeah,
the UK Braves fans.
It was the same as the UK Mets fans. That actually, the UK Mets guys are really, really good people. You know, they take it in the right spirit. Whereas all the Mets fans I've met in the States, even when I was out in Philly, I was at Philly airport flying back and I said my Philly t-shirt on, my cap on, the Mets guy goes, "You guys suck," as he walks past. I'm like, "Thanks, dude."
Yeah.
You better say something nice about Pete Pratt now as well. You can't leave him out.
Oh, I can't. Yeah. And the Marlins.
You better do the whole round.
hey, here we go. Look, yeah.
I'm not going to say anything, but I am from the UK.
What?
I think I told you that once, but I'm from the Lake District innately. So I grew up there from the age of about 3 months old till I was 6 years old. So, you know, I think there's something to it with UK baseball fans. I'll say that.
Oh,
I'm a dual citizen. So hopefully one day I'll be back over that way.
And if you do, mate, let us know.
Absolutely.
We will sort some it out. Guys, that wraps up episode 9 of the podcast. This has been a good one. I've really enjoyed this one. Probably my favorite yet. Thank you for listening and subscribing and spreading the word, because the numbers have been really fantastic. We will definitely get Alex back on. Definitely. And long either, because we've got some other great guests coming on that I've lined up. So some exciting times for the podcast. Next week, we've got Marlins UK on to discuss the second Marlins series that week and discuss what happened, hopefully discussing a Philly sweep.
And also
looking ahead to the London series, which is next weekend as well, and hoping to meet many of you Phillies fans in the UK in London for a festival of baseball. But guys, that is all. Ryan, thank you very much, buddy.
Pleasure, as always.
Alex, thank you very much for coming on.
Cheers. Good to be here.
And to everybody out there, ring the bell.
Ring the bell.
Ring the bell.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.